You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is the Anfield Wrap. Liverpool fighting on all four fronts. It goes on this season. An excellent victory against Cardiff City at the weekend, setting up a fifth round game against Norwich. We've also got a massive league game against Leicester to get through as well in this one, as well as probably touching on a soupçon of the Africa Cup of Nations final that many of us will have watched last night. It is an excellent time to be a Liverpool supporter. It is great to see Liverpool fighting on all four fronts. So if you haven't downloaded the Anfield Wrap app, please do so. I will remind you of that later on, but with me right now I've got Sean O'Donnell, Paul Cope and Rob Gutman. And Sean, in front of goal, and I think that, you know, in front of goal skews things massively, it's a game of two halves from a Liverpool point of view. First half, your only mild concern was that the Reds looked like they couldn't hit a barn door. Well, they couldn't hit a barn door as long as the barn door was suspended from the ceiling. That barn door they'd have absolutely battered into smithereens, but they just didn't look themselves in front of goal. It all changes, the whole game changes, the whole outlook changes as soon as Jota makes it 1-0.
It does, but I was all right with it. You know, I think the way things have played out have actually really worked in our favour. So, first and foremost, you know, we're just feeling ourselves out. We're feeling them out for the first half. It's a case of we haven't played for a while. Everyone's been on holiday and what have you, or away on international duty. So, to come back, to be able to play Cardiff at home and to be able to have 45 minutes to ease your way into the game.
To get your demons out.
Yeah,
a bit of detox.
Exactly. I think really played into our hands, and we were able to just hit all those balls over the, you know, Curtis has a few, doesn't he, that he smashes over the bar. So I was all right with it. You know, I think it felt like it was always going to come, and that was the best thing for me. And yeah, as you say, the goal changes everything second half.
The goal does change everything, Rob, but you are coloured by performances when the goal doesn't come, if you sort of know what I mean. Like, for instance, and I think it happens with individual performances. We'll talk a little bit about Curtis Jones, but I think it also just happens with a collective performance. When Curtis does miss that very, very good opportunity where he's even got time to take a touch and pick his spot high or low, wherever he feels, it did just sort of make you feel of the first half, oh God, almost a bit like, well, what was the point of all that then? Whereas the actual point was Liverpool do play well, and as Sean says, they are feeling Cardiff out, they're working out where the weaknesses are. They're in the penalty box an awful lot is the thing I would say, and you can take that sort of thing for granted.
Yeah, if you sort of weigh up the pluses and minuses from an objective viewpoint, watching it back with you know, knowing how this played out, you go, okay, Liverpool are up against a weakened Cardiff team, so it's not no surprise that we finally put them to the sword. But those wind conditions were extreme, and I know it's been a while since wind has affected an Anfield match quite like that has. And in the first half, they were particularly extreme, although the weather was doing incredible things in the second half. That's it's a whole other show, that, by the way. Meteorological special. But that notwithstanding, and sorry, let's add into the fact that you just said there was a rustiness thing going on. There's definitely a rustiness thing going on. There was a set of lads that maybe hadn't been put together in that combination as well thing going on. But actually, you know, we were just saying before we came on air, we were sitting at the game, me and Steve Graves, with a lad who's a Newcastle fan, who was our guest, and he's a learned enough Newcastle fan, I would say. And we came down at halftime, we were all a bit frustrated, a tiny bit disconsolate, wondering what the fuck's going on here. And he said, I think you played really well, you know. I went, well, what? Who, where? And then you stop and think about it, and the things you just alluded to, Liverpool do knock the ball around at a pace that you do sort of realise isn't normal, you know? Only really Liverpool and City can do this thing, this sort of playing it like it's five-a-side in triangles in all parts of the pitch is really a special thing to be able to do. And in doing so, we carve out these really, really decent chances at times. The Jota one, which is obviously about his incredible turn. There's the, as you said, the Curtis one where he really should take a touch. But there's the Trent one as well, where even he might have taken a touch when he's swooping in from the right-hand side. So you know what? Frustration colours our thinking on this one as to what actually went on there. And I think we also might, in that frustration, not just harsh on the whole team, I think we might have been a bit harsh on individuals. And I know we'll come on to talk about them. You've alluded to Curtis being one, but there were others.
There were others, I think, Paul. The issue is, and there's a really good example of it, I think, second half, where Van Dijk plays an absolute peach of a ball to Minamino, switches the play massively, goes to that right-hand side. And Minamino's first touch is incredible in that he puts it into an area where he can run onto it and he might be in on goal or he can pick someone out. The passage of play is great, but Minamino's not as fast as Mo Salah. And so the touch is perfect, and everything's there for him, but Minamino's not as fast as Mo Salah. And you end up in this situation where it almost feels a little bit unfair, like he's sort of done the right thing, but it ends up looking like the wrong thing, and he's done the Liverpool thing, but it ends up looking like the wrong thing. And this is the funny sort of personnel problem that Liverpool have, is that the bar is so high. One of the things I came away from yesterday's game thinking is the bar now is basically you want to play for the best team in the world. That's the bar. The bar isn't, you want to play for a team that can play Champions League football or can, you know, is a Premier League team. Do you want to play for the best team in the world? Because the bar's the best team in the world. That's what they're trying to be. And that's one of the reasons why I think you can be frustrated with some aspects of personnel, some aspects of rhythm at times.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because as you were talking, then the phrase that popped into my head that people always talk about with Liverpool squads or have done over the past few years is it's too big a drop-off. Like, it's too big a drop-off from one player to the next, to their replacement. But what no one ever sort of mentions when they talk about that drop-off is just how high the first lad is.
Yeah.
It's fine to build a squad where the drop-off from one to the next, to from the first choice to the second choice, is all right when the first lad isn't the best in the world. But to build a squad where the drop-off isn't phenomenal from first choice to second choice, when your first 11... best in the world, to build that squad's really, really difficult. And I don't think we ever really talk about that, because you've got this Man City as the sort of benchmark, which skews everything. In the history of football, how many football teams have been able to go, well, we'll have the best in the world playing right midfield and the second best in the world is his backup? That just, when has that ever happened? So I think it's just inevitably a problem any team's going to face when you build a team that's this good. And at the same time, we're doing it. I know we're going to come on to this, like how good the squad looks when it's fully fit. But when you look around it now, it's actually not that bad for that. Even the Minamino drop off. Yeah, okay, he's not Mo Salah and he can't do what Mo Salah does. But how many goals has he scored this season?
7.
From, like, I saw a stat yesterday, he scored, I saw Messi score last night, so it might be the same number of goals as Messi now this season.
It's more. Messi scored fuck all, he's shit.
There we go. So we're saying Minamino is better than Messi.
Definitely.
Yeah. He's more of the results business.
Which I'm all over, by the way. Like, I love that.
He's got a goal every 114 minutes this season, Minamino. He's on fire.
Yeah.
Well, mainly against Preston, but...
No, but it's more that... Well,
no, it's on being unfair.
No, but on him, and he's a good example, but there's a couple of others. The problem that they have, I think, Sean, is it isn't a conversation, really, at times, about whether or not they're really good players, because they are. It's how they just sort of fit. And then within that, it's a rhythm thing. And that's where I do feel, like, genuinely, I was very frustrated with two or three Liverpool players up till about sort of 55 minutes. But when you do take a step back from that, it is a little bit like, well, it's not. It isn't even that they need to be at their best and in rhythm with everyone else. It's that everyone else sort of needs to be as well, because it is such a fine-oiled machine. So one little thing's out, as was sort of the case at times first half. It means that for all of them, it's just a little bit out. But simultaneously, as our Newcastle supporter in reportage says, you know, they're also really, really good. And they're still really, really, really good. And they're still playing at a pace that most teams can only ever dream of.
Yeah, I think we've been spoiled, haven't we, with the finished product straight away all the time in the league, you know, particularly in the league and Champions League. I think one thing we haven't mentioned is that it was a 12 o'clock kickoff yesterday.
Yeah.
How many Sunday 12 o'clocks do you see a potent attack, you know, a potent team that's got rhythm? So I think that's one thing to mention. I think, you know, it's important to say that, you know, coming into a game when you haven't played for 2 weeks or however, to play at 12 o'clock on a Sunday is a bit of a thing as well. But in terms of the drop-off and stuff, this feels like the first time, certainly in the Klopp era, actually, where we've got a really, really good squad. And injuries have sort of masked that over the last couple of months, where you think, it's good, but is it that good? And now everyone's coming back into full fitness. It really does feel good. I think the mood in general is so positive now. Like that January that we just went through without Salah and Mane, you could argue has really benefited us. And it was a knife edge whether it would or not. And I think that it's allowed the likes of Minamino to really fit in and click and stuff like that. So I'm feeling positive.
Very positive indeed. The only shame really from yesterday, I mean, we'll come on to a couple of performances, Rob, is that Chamberlain and especially Gomez had COVID. I think it would have been really useful to have been an opportunity to get Gomez some time on the pitch. Injuries notwithstanding, it's difficult to quite see where that happens now before quite possibly Norwich in the fifth round of the FA Cup. Maybe Norwich in the league, but even that would feel like a big bold move at this stage, given his lack of football. It is a shame that opportunity wasn't there for both of them, but I think especially for Gomez.
Yes, the whole situation around Gomez worries me because, the fact that he's not able to get his chances, and when they're possibly there, as you just said, circumstances intervened for him. But there's a mood music around him. Amongst supporters, I'm going to say, anytime his name comes up, just casually, outside of these sort of more, forensic discussions, people go, he's not what he was, is he, Gomez? And, I've heard that a lot recently, and I'm thinking, that's not really true or fair or allowing for the context that he's back from an injury he hasn't played at all, you know, before we even get into a more in-depth conversation. What we do have on our hands there is a centre-half, when fully fit and firing, who's one of the very best in the world, who if he was available you'd really want us to buy. And we, although Konate has really impressed us all this season, we had a little glimmer of a reminder that he's not the finished product yesterday.
Very much not, no.
He was, you know, but look, there was some drop-off performances that are understandable, and I wouldn't like to sort of use yesterday as a marker for a number of those lads. But it is a reminder, we know Matip can't play three games in a week. We know Matip is one injury, small injury away from becoming a big injury. It could be within 6 months' time, a year's time, that Joe Gomez and Van Dijk are back to being our number one pairing. Well, they certainly have the potential to be. If somebody told me that was going to be the case in a year's time, I'd go, absolutely sound. I'm cool with that.
That doesn't feel mad by any stretch of the imagination.
No, but within that is also the omnipresent risk that he may get sold because he's frustrated come this summer for something like 35, 40 million. And I personally will be very, very sad and frustrated the day that happens because I think he's a really elite centre-back.
Want to talk about one big thing. It was right in front of me, the penalty incident for Cardiff in the first half. It wasn't a pen. The lad was absolutely looking for it. If anything, it doesn't make any sense to me because he could have just got out from under his feet and shot. To be honest, it's a red card, isn't it? The keeper instance at the start of the second half. It's a red card.
I've seen what the ref, you know, this is the ref's professional ref's opinion afterwards in some of the broadsheets saying why it wasn't a red card. I don't know. They said there's cover around the back and it's not sufficiently wrecked.
Are you saying it was... Because this is dead interesting, even going back to the weather conversation. I've switched sides now. I've become like the armchair supporter. So for the lads in the match, it's funny seeing the different perspectives. So do you know that in VAR, they looked at two things for the red card?
No, go on.
Yeah.
So are you saying it's a red card just because he's denying a goal scoring opportunity?
I think that if a centre-half does that... My perspective on this and why I think the rule... And it might be that the rule's not quite right. My position on this is there is a covering defender, but if a centre-half did that to a player... And the covering defender, in inverted commas, was the goalkeeper, that'd be a red card.
Yeah.
So that's my thing on it, is when I see it, is I think that, for instance, if someone scythes someone down like that in that scenario, and that player's going to run through and has only got the keeper to beat, then everyone would, because Konate is on the cover, but everyone would say, but there's no covering defender.
Yeah.
The covering defender happens to be the outfield player and not the goalkeeper. And for me, genuinely, I think that's why I think it's a red card.
I think it's an anomalous situation, though.
And I think you're 100% right, and that didn't get mentioned once on TV. And I didn't think of it until now, because I think the fact that it's the goalie, doesn't it, skews everything.
It's like when no one can see an offside when the keepers play. Yes. The keepers come past the ball, if you know what I mean. No 100%. One can then sort of conceive of why it's offside.
Yeah, because it's always the keeper plus one in your head.
The Arsenal goal this season, Saka scores and Saka celebrates like a man possessed, even though he's about 2 yards offside, 3 yards offside, and everyone goes berserk, and then no players can understand why this hasn't been given because the lad was there, but the keeper's the wrong side. I think the keeper's, that's why I think it's a red card.
I think you're right.
I don't know what the rule is, that's the first time I've thought of it.
But Neil's right, isn't he? Like, if
Morally is right.
Denying a goal scoring opportunity is basically denying a 1-on-1 with the goalie.
Yeah.
That's right. When you boil it down, that's what we're saying. You had a 1-on-1 with the goalie and the defender took you out. Well, actually, this is more of a goal scoring opportunity, isn't it? Because you didn't have a 1-on-1 with the goalie. You had a 1-on-1 with Konate and he can't use his hands.
Yeah.
Unless we're playing flykeeper or whatever you want to call it.
Unless the rules anomalously say, you know, differentiate.
So what did they say on the telly? Because I was.
They first checked. So they do nothing. So you're thinking, oh God, they're going to get us with the second one. Because they did the first check and it was about goal scoring opportunity and just said no, because the fella's on the cover. But no one, as far as I'm aware, no one mentioned the fact that what you've just discussed.
Was there somebody else on the cover as well? I can't see.
No, it was just Konate, I think. But then they also went for
reckless,
like endangering the player because his stud went down the back of his leg. But even watching that slowly, you were like, nah, you're not going to get that.
So say this quietly, but yesterday to me felt like we got a lot of decisions because of the badge we had on our crest and because we were at home. I think for years and years, Man United used to get tarnished with that brush and we used to think, oh, isn't this a disgrace? This is unfair. This is whatever. It felt a lot of decisions went our way yesterday, Anderson. As I say it quietly. I'm not going to shout about that.
I mean, there's a lot of weeks where that doesn't happen, but
it is a thing. You know, it's a thing.
But it's usually a thing when the crowd's paying for it, and our crowd was a library. To be fair to them, it was a library.
Rob, I was thinking of conversations Neil and I have had in recent and past times with this. Like, I'm getting to the point now, even watching it at home, I think we should start every game against crap teams with a public service announcement. Just have George saying,
look, library.
Well, Cardiff fans, welcome to Anfield. Just so you know, it's a midday kickoff on a Sunday. It's not a library. There are no books, just before you ask the question. And our famous atmosphere has never been, just to be clear, it has never been brought out for a gang of shithouses like you at Sunday at 12 o'clock. If you want to hear our famous atmosphere, tune in to the Inter Milan game a week on Wednesday.
Qualify for the European Cup, Nomads.
That's it.
Yes.
Just put it to bed before they start. I'm sick of it now.
Also, they'd been on trains with ale in front of them since 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
We'd been in bed till half an hour before kickoff. You know, the vast majority of our crowd. That's why it was a library.
That was indeed. Okay, let's get back into that first half then a little bit, Sean. I think all Cardiff's chances in that first half, they sort of stem from Liverpool's mistakes. Rob's mentioned the weather. I think there's a little thing. Keita plays the ball into Jota for the turn. I think the weather does play a big part in that period, as Rob said earlier on. But I think there was a general sort of feeling we'd have liked a little bit more from Jones and Keita, not least because it was an opportunity to impress now. And, you know, Elliot impresses, Thiago's Thiago, Henderson's the captain, Fabinho's going to come back. And my point here is that you can find yourself slipping down this pecking order a little bit, although there are tons of games.
Yeah, I said this to my mate next to me yesterday. I feel like Keita, every player, when they get interviewed, they say, who's the most skillful player? Who's the best player? I've seen it a few times now. I know Jota said something recently. Van Dijk said it. They all say Keita. He must be unbelievable in training. And it's like, how long can you wait until it doesn't come and materialise in games? I didn't think he was bad by any stretch of the imagination. I thought he was sound, but sound, as you said, the Bar's the best team in the world. So is sound going to push you on and get you through? Sorry, you're going to say something?
No, I was back to me. just a bit of presenting.
Yeah. and with regards to Jones, you know, as I say, we touched on it earlier. He hit a few over the bar, didn't he? For me, as I say, I was all right with it because I think as long as he's getting there and having a shot and doing that bit, I think the rest will come. And you know, the 12 o'clock thing, the Sunday thing, all that type of stuff does play into it with him.
And, you know, we talked all weekend, who do you think will start, who would you want to start? Now, I really, really wanted to see Harvey Elliott and Luis Diaz yesterday. I really wanted to see them. But in sort of wishing that they started, I want to hear their names on the first 11, I suddenly thought, that could be a frustrating hour for them. Do you know what I mean? They're around lads who are out of rhythm. Cardiff will be set. Isn't it better to play the last half hour against more relatively tiring legs, especially they're not Premier League legs? And so it transpired. I do wonder if you'd flip those roles, if Curtis and Naby had got to do the last half hour, whether we'd have seen more from them. I think the judgment on Jones is harsher than on is harsh actually. I think he played quite well. He was very neat and tidy. Wasn't at his best, but he's pretty neat and tidy and intelligent with his use of the ball. And if one of those wild shots, especially the one where he should have said he scores, goes in, I think we're talking about isn't Curtis Jones pushing on. I think we push all little minor frustrations to one side, and Naby as well has two shots which looked shit, but they were very, very wind affected. So, you know, again, they played in the frustrating phase, and I think they're damned with that.
Is there not a thing where what they are or aren't damned with at times, both of them, and they're both, you know, hugely disparate players with disparate backgrounds. One was as a youth prospect coming through at Liverpool. The other one was, I think, may well still be the most expensive midfielder in our history, and was someone we were really eager to see the club sign. One of the things I wonder about here is it is this notion of imposing themselves, and that may there's just some games where I think for a lot of midfielders, and I don't just mean this involving Liverpool, I mean games of football, I think in our minds midfielders impose themselves. But I think if you probably looked up and down the country at the games across the FA Cup, there's probably not 8 or 9 midfielders who genuinely do a thing where you get to say, and he really imposed himself on that game. But I think in our minds, that's what we sort of expect from the role, not just the idea of lads keeping it ticking over and being tidy. And I think that becomes even more the case at home against lower league opposition. You're a bit like, I expect to see us absolutely run the show, but only one of them could run the show anyway if there was a show to be run, and maybe there just wasn't a show to be run. Just sort of know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I do. I mean, they're different cases. With Curtis, you know, we praised him about a couple of weeks ago for being the new Ginny Wijnaldum on his day. And I think if he was listening, he goes, what do you want? What are you happy with? Me being the new Ginny Wijnaldum, or do you want me to be the new, like I've said before, like the new Steve McManaman, where I'm the guy you give the ball to and I'm running at people? We've seen him impose himself, like it was at Shrewsbury and a couple of other games, Leicester. We were getting on the ball time and time again, and he was imposing himself. Kite is a different thing. He's played slightly out of position. He's played on the right side, isn't he, of the eights, whereas he's normally better on the left, I think, if I'm right in saying. Actually, no, he can play both, so maybe I'm talking crap. He just looked ring rusty, and he's looked really good in the AFCON, and he can impose himself on games. But he's got a strange habit of when he dips his level, he really dips his level, Naby, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm his biggest fan, literally, in the entire universe. There isn't anyone who's a bigger fan than Naby Keita, but he does frustrate me in how he can let his level drop, and he did.
I think he's got a really weird sweet spot in terms of the opposition, Naby, where I think he can, if he gets a certain sort of opposition who are pretty good but not absolutely terrific.
Man United.
I think that's sort of the idea of games against sides who are sort of 5th to 10th, where it's a bit more of a game of football, and you'll get the opportunity to impose yourself to a degree. I think he really takes it in those games. It's a funny one to sort of to end up. I think the manager does pick his games for him as well a little bit with trying to work that out in mind. The big positive, and in lots of ways, sure, and it's a strange thing to say because I think the best footballer in the world plays for Liverpool, but in many ways the biggest positive of the season is Diogo Jota.
Yep.
You know, it's now 15 and 19. There's no reason to think that's slowing down as a rate. We are in all competitions. The chances, both the chances to play and then therefore the chances to get chances, will come. There's every possibility he finishes on around 25 all comps. It's a remarkable set of goals. He arguably misses an easier chance that he creates with that turn in the first half, but his ability in the air is absolutely phenomenal. It's a genuinely great header from about 12 yards out.
Yeah, I think it looks world class. I think he looked amazing when he first came in until he got the injury, and you almost think, is this just a momentum thing? Is it coming to Liverpool and he's just really sort of stepped on? He looks even better this year, and I think it's a testament to him. As I say, I think Mane and Salah going away has done him the world of good, because he's been able to be the most senior person up there. You know, even with Firmino there, I still look at Jota and think, actually, do you know what? You're the one who's going to get us the goal here. And yeah, that header is brilliant. It's a great goal, and you can rely on him to do that. I think with the wing backs that we've got, the way we've been playing, you know, and the way we tend to play and get through, if we don't sort of play right through, is we'll come from the wings and we'll cross it in, and having him there to sort of flick it on and have that ability in the air is brilliant. And he's been, what an addition he's been.
I liked. His partnership with Luis Diaz when Diaz came on. They got quite close to each other a number of times. I like that. You know, they almost dovetail. Diaz got a lot more central than I was expecting, although he was you know, he's stationed on the left. He got within 10 yards and they particularly flourished. I thought, I don't know how long it was. Maybe it was 10 minutes, maybe it was 18 minutes. Bobby Firmino got dropped back into midfield, into a true eighth position. That was the most exciting, I'm going to say this now, that was the most exciting thing that happened for me yesterday, because I thought he was really, really good there. Yeah. And we've all sort of glibly said in the past, you know, Firmino, as he gets older, could play midfield, you know. Everyone sort of said that and everyone goes, yeah, but he's a forward. But he actually looked good there. And for a moment, you could just see the future and go, he could flourish there. One, it could take this burden off him that he's only judged by his numbers whilst we give the caveat. But we're not judging him by his numbers, but we do. By his numbers, I mean his goals. I thought he was great.
I'm sure I read that he was a centre-half as a youth player. That's why he's so good in the air and stuff. I joked to my mate saying he'll be playing the holding role for us next year, Gerrard, like when he got dropped back in 13-14.
Well, I thought he was good. I liked the way, you know, he got it. He was getting his head up and looking for them. He just had that little bit more space, but still managing to do bits in tight spots in centre mid. It was great.
Did you see Henderson when he put Firmino there? He like looked at Klopp and like put his hands in the air, like, what's going on? Like, like screaming at him. Klopp was like, no, this is happening. And he was like, oh, sound.
It was my favourite thing when they started making the subs and you start thinking, I don't know where anyone's playing anymore.
I always had to readjust a lot.
But my favourite thing about that is if we watch Liverpool every week, and we know these players inside out, and we're going, I don't know where anyone's playing anymore. Imagine what Cardiff felt like. Like, they're going, isn't he centre forward? Isn't this lad centre forward? And like, not anymore. And that just adds to our whole thing. Like, when we're at our best, we are so fluid, and we talk a lot about the interchange and the triangles and all these things. We're creating this squad now where at every level we've got that. And I think it's phenomenal. It's really exciting, because I'm with you. And that is one of the things as time progresses and goes back to the Gomez conversation. Well, it ties them all together. Something we've talked about over the years is, I think Liverpool fans especially, maybe other fans do this as well, we always want everyone to be the best player all the time. So it's like everyone on the pitch has to be the best player on the pitch all the time. And then if Gomez isn't in the squad, he'll have to be sold then. And I remember it happening with Wijnaldum about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe not even that long, and people were like, oh, he's finished. And I remember the year later saying, everyone look out for Wijnaldum. And people were like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, he just had a dip last year and there was different things. He's still a really good player and you've forgotten all about him. And this is the whole point of having a squad, which Liverpool fans simultaneously have wanted for years. And then when we have it, just can't, our heads explode, I think. Maybe because we're not used to having such a good squad. You forget the fact that there'll always be lads who aren't playing and things can change very quickly. And you also need lads who can do loads of roles and just put a 7 out of 10 performance in when you need it, which we've got a few of those now, which is really positive.
As part of that, Rob, I thought it was interesting how unbelievably committed he was to Elliot, centre mid, right hand side. So everyone else effectively moves around. Diaz comes on and gets his brief where you'd expect, but everyone else, Henderson moves, Milner comes on and plays six, which you wouldn't expect. Jota goes to the right, which I don't think he likes, and I don't think he flourishes there that much. Firmino has a period back in midfield. Who ends up playing through the middle? Jota that goes back through the middle and then someone else comes
on
and plays
right. Jota's central and Taki Minamino's wide right, and then Taki comes off, Jota goes right, and
Firmino goes back through the middle. The point being is that there was this thing was ongoing for everyone apart from one player, and it was that Harvey Elliott came on, he just played that position. And every minute he's had on playing for Liverpool this season, including in pre-season, has been playing that position. Yeah. It does now look like, you know, in a quite a Klopp way, he does this sometimes with players when he's trying to adapt them into a position. There's not a conversation about you playing anywhere else. You're there now. Get used to it. This is your thing. I thought Elliott was great.
Yes, he was. I mean, wow, let's get started on him. I mean, he was... His position, his best position is wide right, but the best footballer in the world plays there, Mo Salah. So that's ruled out from the word go. I think that what it says is that Klopp wants Elliot in his first team as often as possible. We saw it at the beginning of the season. I don't think he was just bedding him in, giving him an opportunity early season. I think he wants him in the team. I think he sees there's a stellar trajectory here, that this boy is going to catch light like a young Owen or Messi, and burdening him with expectation here. But I do think Klopp thinks it's worth seeing if that could happen. And for that to happen, he has to have a place for him in the team. And it can't be Mo's position, so that's the one. The only other one he could have considered, I think, is the false nine for Elliott, and I think he can play that role. But I think he thinks, which, you know, we're now building a squad of front three players. Elliot, I can get him in the team wide, you know, right-sided number eight every week, and he can do things. And boy, did he. I mean, the goal, I didn't realise how good it was when I saw it in the ground until you watch it back again and again. You go, bloody hell, that's a hit. You know, it's a touch and a hit. It really was quality.
He's, Sean, he's clearly backed completely. It, to me, it's interesting that when Milner comes on, Milner goes six and Henderson goes left-sided eight. And the reason why that sort of got my attention was it can't be because he wants Milner to play six. I don't like Milner there. I don't think Milner likes being there. I think he'd probably rather play fullback, to be honest with you. But I think it was Jordan. When Harvey's playing, he's playing here. So you're going to have to get used to playing there a little bit. And I thought that's what that to me again told the story of there's a very clear role for this player in this team. And I think the other thing it did was all of our, and this can sometimes be frustrating, don't get me wrong, but all of our play went really central and really narrow. Like we were trying to get through the middle then from that point onwards. That can work for you. And it, obviously he gets his goal. So
yeah, I mean, it's so exciting, isn't it? Just watching him. I feel the amount that Klopp backs him for me is such a big thing, because I did you see in his interview after it when he said, you know, it was Harvey's mental strength that he was saying to me on the Monday in Melwood, come on boss, lift your head up, you know, I'm all right, because Klopp was that down about it. I think Thursday will be a big one. You know, is he going to be, if he's in the team on Thursday, I think that's a massive statement. Because looking at all the videos from training and stuff, he's banging them in top corner. Like, I've never seen, I know it's training and all that, but I've never seen clips like that from a young kid. I was the 18, 17. It's mad. For me, he's the player as well. So, you know, you've got Diaz, you know, which I'm sure we'll come to talk about, but seeing them both come on at the same time just felt like, okay, we're in a season now.
There's a couple of things on Elliot. One was that his interview, I don't know whether you saw his interview to LFC TV, and the thing that jumped out to me was saying, like, Joe Walters, because he mentioned it post-match on TV, the physios and all the rest of it, but something he said about the support of the squad just made me laugh completely unattached to football. He was like, yeah, it's like a one big family, that the lads were messaging me every 10 minutes. My first thought was, that would do my head in. I had a load of lads just messaging me every 10 minutes. I'd be like, lads, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not interested. I will start this by saying, before I go down there, just with a, you know, a little caveat to all of this praise, I'll start by saying, like, get your bets on for a Ballon d'Or winner at some point in the next 10 years now, because I think he is that good. That goal, as Rob said, is phenomenal. I love little things in football. Like, when you watch it back, if you watch the flight of the ball doesn't spin. No. He hits it. I love it when players can hit a ball and it just, like, stays on in the same trajectory the whole time. Incredible. And at the same time, it reminded me, watching that, and even Joe moving the Henderson round, we have to be aware how much it changes the dynamics of this entire team. Because that triangle that we talk about a lot on the right-hand side of Salah, Henderson, Trent, Henderson plays that role so, so well in so many ways, not just covering for Trent, which we talk a lot about, but that overlapping run on the outside of Salah to give us width allows for Salah to make that cutting inside run, which gives us everything you want. You've got width, you've got threat inside. I remember Neil saying earlier in the season when Elliot was playing that role, and he clearly wanted him in that role, and Henderson was the one being pushed out. Everything starts coming inside. When you've got him and Salah playing those roles right next to each other, you do lose something, and you lose, by playing Henderson on the left, you lose something in Henderson's game as well, because he's right-footed and he's coming inside all the time.
But I think Henderson was briefed with playing the Elliott role. That was the interesting thing about that move. He almost invented that role for Harvey Elliott and started, because, you know, he basically wanted a double Salah, a mini-me of Salah, which he's grooming Elliot to become. And when Elliot had to drop out the team with that injury, I think his first thing to say to Jordan Henderson was, you know what that kid's been doing, can you do that? And it's such a testimony to Jordan Henderson that he could come in and work it out straight away.
And there's an element to that. I think it's worth, on this, I think it's really interesting as to where the balance is, because for instance, Henderson puts the ball in for Mane in at the City at home, 1920, on the outside, goes on the outside, does that, he scores a couple that cross, from that side. And I wonder whether or not it's more the case that Klopp's seen that and gone, I want that, but I want a more naturally front three-ish player rather than what Jordan is, which is a lad who does 8 and 6. I'd rather have a lad who's 8 and 10. And over a period of time, he's ended up and he's launching Elliot. I actually thought, Rob, second half of his performance on the pitch, I thought you saw Elliot go wide more than he had done other times. He puts one really good ball in with his right foot, having gone on the outside. And I wonder if that's been his little note that he's had, which was, it was all very good at the first part of the season, but you can't just always come this way. You've got to show the threat going the other way, not least because it means that they don't know how to defend you. I wonder whether or not that is almost the next phase of this, which is that Elliot's got to be a little bit more prepared to get out of his comfort zone of left foot, cutting in, looking great, and do a little bit more of only every now and again the way Salah does. You know, Salah scored great goals this season with his right foot, but we all know he'd much rather step in on his left and bend it. I think you've got to have both threats, is what I'm saying. And then Trent's also then got to maybe at times be a bit more orthodox as a fullback, and he's got to offer a little bit more of that threat as well if it's going to work for the three of them. They've all got to, they'll work it out over a period of time, is what I'm saying. It's just, you know, there's four trophies to win here. Clock's ticking.
I mean, in crude terms, it's a double winger system. That's what's going on there. It very much reminds me of the way City have played, actually before Guardiola, where it was where their entire approach is about overload on the flanks.
Yeah.
Just to absolutely over, even when Milner was playing there, to overload you in the wide areas such that they can get those triangles in, and if they get themselves to a position just inside the wide area of the box, they're just a side foot towards the penalty spot, will find the man arriving. That's how they've played for decades, or donkey's years anyway. And I think you achieve that best when you've got two wingers. You can have a Trent, he's great, but Trent's always going to want to drop you 15 yards deeper so he can get a whipped ball, because he's Beckham, you know, in crude terms. Jordan's not dissimilar if you play him in that position, but Elliot, like Salah, can drop a shoulder and beat a man, beat two, you know? Play those 1-2s with a little bit more finesse, and I think that's why Elliot's is his dream, because he wants the double winger. And I wonder if we might see some of that with Mane and Diaz on occasions on the other side.
On Diaz, Paul, he firstly taller than I thought, which is always nice, very wiry.
I had warned people, he's only just under 6 foot.
Taller than I thought.
I've been warning people all week.
Rightly so. He's great for the goal. I mean, Minamino's penalty box ability is phenomenal, frankly. He has the disallowed goal first half. It's mad how good a finisher he is, it really is. Yeah. I mean, it's strange to say you don't know what his best position is, but Diaz, bright as anything, great feet. Looked like he really enjoyed it, I think, and I think that this is something that I think Klopp and Liverpool are good at. I think they're good at getting footballers to really enjoy the football, and it felt like that was the case for Diaz from minute one there. Like, I'm gonna have a good time here. It was awful when he went down with the injury, wasn't it? It was deeply upsetting.
I've genuinely never been happier to see a replay and it show a massive grok land with his studs on someone's knee. Like, I was so happy when I saw that that's what the injury was, because when the camera first went on him when he'd gone down, it looked
ACL.
All the world, it is cruciate, because he's landed funny from jumping for the ball, and it looks like, oh, he's just twisted his knee. So when they showed it again and it showed the lad landing on his knee, it's like, oh, it's fine. Like, it'll just be an impact injury, which turned out to be the case. And touch wood, that's what having to find wood to touch. That's what Klopp said afterwards, like, hopefully it's all right. The goal, I think, is phenomenal. His role in the goal, considering he hasn't played for us before, do you know, he's just come in this week. Has he even had a training session?
Maybe one training session.
For that to effectively be his natural instinct of that's what he's all about, when on the face of it, he's a fancy winger who's taller than we think, which is always a bonus.
He took Anfield's collective breath away. Did you notice that? I mean, the crowd, they gasped, and it reminded me of Suarez things. Obviously, I think it did all of us.
Yeah. Well, I think there's so much in that. Like, the South American lad, that we that side of it, the fact he just wants to hunt the ball. And then I don't think enough has been made of his ability. Once he's got the ball, his quick feet to move it around the player, to pull that ball back.
That turns ridiculous.
He's going to be phenomenal. And did you see his tweet? He tweeted in Spanish, I presume, after the game. So he did the whole translate on Twitter. And he made a point of saying that, Joe, great team performance and all that. And he was like, fantastic to play in front of that atmosphere for the first time. And I thought, Jesus Christ, mate. Yeah. If you were happy with that one, imagine what you're going to be like when you see a proper one.
By the way, mates, not us.
The best thing about it for me was just the psychological boost that gives everyone. Because, you know, bringing a new player in, you know, we know it gives people a boost. But when you bring in someone in who's that world class, just everyone, like, not just the players. So obviously it raises all the other players' levels, because I think they're trying to, you know, impress him, if that makes sense. But I think the mood that generated for the fan base, and yeah, it wasn't the best atmosphere, but I've never seen as many people up for Cardiff at home in the FA Cup at 12 o'clock on a Sunday, because they just wanted to see him, even if it was 10 minutes or something.
Yeah.
It was great. Strength and depth is unbelievable. Thiago gets a little run around Paul, which was nice to see. He was great for a minute or two, I thought, down the left-hand side. And again, the idea of maybe how that side's going to function. But it's as much this, you know, the strength and depth suddenly is just enormous, as we were saying earlier on. You know, there's going to be, and to go back to your earlier point, there's going to be lads not in match day squads.
Yeah.
And I think we've all got to keep our heads a little bit. I think that a couple will be going in the summer, and maybe there'll be a couple more outs in the summer than there will be ins. I'm expecting a couple of big ins. But my point is more, you know, it's the strength in depth is enormous, and we are just going to have to be aware that the manager's going to be picking as he sees fit, and a couple of times he's going to make a big call, and you know what, he might get one or two wrong over the course of games because he's going to have decisions to make if they don't get injured.
Yeah, well, he is. It's something I love to talk about. Instead of saying if, just say, well, when. He will get things wrong. Things will go badly when you. That's the downside. Everyone loves to talk about like the great things about having all these loads of great players in a deep squad and stuff. But ultimately, the more choices you've got to make in anything in life, the more likely you are to make a mistake. So sooner or later, he will make that mistake. I am so excited that the fact that we are still in all four competitions.
It couldn't have been timed better, could it?
No, it's phenomenal because we've still got all of them to go. And you've got all of those lads all knowing that and all in with a shout of, it's not like we've got loads, like even Gomez, going back to that conversation, talking about, I'm with you and Rob that, you know, in a year's time, yeah, it could be Van Dijk and Gomez. If I'm Gomez and I'm whispering Gomez's ear, I'm saying to him, mate, it could be you and Van Dijk in the Champions League final. That's not beyond the realms of possibility. A lot can change in the space of a few months. So when you've got so many competitions to play for and you know you can bring these lads in, it always keeps them on their toes then. And you can genuinely be saying to everyone, there's a chance for all four, you know. There's a chance for something that's never been done before. So you all need to be on your toes. It's such an exciting time.
And also, we're very focused on a hierarchy that emerges and goes, he's behind him, he's behind him, he's in the pecking order behind him. But at the end of the day, they all get a chance in training every day, which we don't get to see. And, you know, it can very quickly become a cigarette paper between attacking Minamino, Curtis Jones, and Oxlade-Chamberlain, Javier Elliott, any name you want to pick. So the opportunity, as you're saying, is there for someone to go, you could play in a Champions League semi-final, Champions League final, just do a few bits and keep doing it. I mean, we have seen it happen before. City, I hate to keep using them, but they've had a squad which we're now beginning to enjoy in terms of the depth for a long, long time. But you saw Bernardo Silva totally go off the radar, didn't you, two seasons ago? Yes. It was awful. Well, he was downpegged. I mean, there were periods where Riyad Mahrez was only really getting his game when Sterling and Silva himself weren't available. And Jesus, as many times, really good players are down the pecking order. Iker Gundogan, another one. Suddenly, it was redemption. Just because they put shifts in training and turned up in key games. There's not one of the... And the interesting thing is, there's not one of these lads we could talk about who are all seemingly squad players now who couldn't have forced themselves into the reckoning as a first 11 player within 6 weeks. It's possible for any one of them.
All this, Sean, brings us to Leicester and to AFCON. We've got to acknowledge it. You know, I'm made up man, he scored that key penalty. Not that I had... you know, I wasn't that bothered between Senegal and Egypt. It was just more having missed the earlier one. You could see he would have found it crushing, I think, if he hadn't have scored it. It's a shame Salah doesn't get the opportunity to score his key penalty. I think that's what, you know, I don't like seeing any of the lads upset. Yeah. You know, that's literally how support works. I don't want any of them to ever be upset, but one of them had to be. There has been and will be a lot of chat about how much time both, but especially Salah's played. The flip side of that is, you know, the manager's got to manage them. And it might well be that, for instance, he wants Salah to blow away some cobwebs on Thursday. He feels as though he can wait on Mane till Sunday, vice versa. There's Inter Milan on the horizon. My point here is that it will take a fair bit of management, this. Not as a negative necessarily, just that, you let's be clear, you know, just making these decisions, assessing them, etc. This is where people earn the corn.
Yeah, definitely. I think the way it falls for us, by the way, works perfectly for us, because I think with Mane missing that pen and then going on to be the hero and scoring the winning pen, I think a happy Mane is better for us than a sad Mane, and possibly an angry Salah is better for us than a happy Salah. So I think it does play perfectly. I think you're right, you know, there is management to do, but it's not a bad problem. It's a good problem, because you've got, you know, the options we spoke about before. We know that we can get through games without them. We don't have to rely on them, you know, just for the goals and stuff. I'll be honest, I think Salah comes in, and if he's fit and he's okay physically, I think he just plays Thursday. I think he goes straight in. That's the type of player he is. He wants to be playing all the time. He's a bit like Suarez was, or Suarez is, in that sense, where you get the impression if there was a game going on in the car park today, he'd want to play in it. So I think he does that, and I think Mane's probably the one that he maybe takes his time with, because he's in a better place mentally.
I agree with that. I think you could give Luis Diaz his debut, and then bring Mane on 60, And Mane comes on to a huge ovation because he's won the AFCON. He suddenly feels lifted. He feels like a hero. He doesn't feel like Luis Diaz is displacing him. So that it's win-win in that circle. I mean, God knows how the game would be going at that time, but I feel strategically that's the way to do it. Salah, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't really want to give him 90 if I could avoid it, but, you know, Leicester aren't necessarily going to oblige us when you think they should, as they did at their place. So we can't tell. But yeah, I agree with you. If you're going to not start one, it's Sadio.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with Sean's point as well. And I think he summed it up perfectly. Yeah. I think that... It's like a tongue twister. Yeah. And because we talked about this in the pub last week. Mo Salah has not just got like his age and his trophies to win. He's got a Ballon d'Or to win. I don't think we can underestimate how much he wants to win a Ballon d'Or. And he'll come back and he'll be going. I was thinking about this while he was away because we've done amazingly to win all the games while they've not been there, which, again, I don't think enough has been made of. But he'll be coming back into that dressing room going, right, it won't be, ooh, maybe we could win four trophies. He'd be like, right, we're going to win four trophies. That's it. Like, I'm not interested. I'm not interested in how many points we are behind City. I'm not interested in whether we can or can't win the Champions League. We're going to do it. He's got that steely focus about him. And I think that has, while he's quite a quiet character, I think he's one of those people who leads through his presence.
Yeah.
And I think his desire, his single-mindedness to win will be just such good time for that to come back into the squad.
I loved just watching him being an actual leader in that game. That was him needling the referee, and the referee, you know, giving it back to him was possibly my highlight of that. That was one. The referee offered him the whistle. That was just magical there.
All right then. Leicester get battered by Forest. They turn up to Anfield wounded, but that was the case for the other game, you know, felt like they were mortally wounded, they were going to find it difficult. I think the thing that's forgotten is that the first half against Leicester, they get very, very, very lucky. Leicester are very lucky not to be behind in that game. There's literally a penalty in there. There's then the rebound of the penalty, you name it. I think Leicester had the luck. And then second half, it feels like a great victory and we planned it all along. You do not choose to defend your six-yard box line. That is not a thing you do in a footy match. All of that said, we cannot be complacent at all, Sean. It's an enormous game on Thursday. It is, you know, the way these seasons work is the next game is always the biggest game of the season, and that's now the case for Thursday.
Yeah, we are in the business end now, and I think the business end is, you know, previously it was probably the last couple of months of the season. I think now it starts in February, and I think Leicester are not to be underestimated. If anything, you know,
I'd rather he went through.
Yeah, exactly. I think a wounded. Not necessarily a wounded animal, because I think, you know, we're strong enough to deal with that, but maybe a wounded Rodgers, you know, something where he's going to want to do something different and try and surprise us. I think we've got to be wary of them, I think.
I think when you play those kind of teams, a team that have got a game in them that they can be decent, but they're on their knees a bit, the key is to keep them on their knees.
Yeah.
And it's the most obvious thing in the world.
What we don't do in that game against them.
No.
We give them opportunity to believe.
By missing
the penalty and then a couple of other chances straight after, we give them opportunity to believe. We cannot do that. We've got to. If they start weak, we've got to ensure they stay weak.
Yeah. What they achieved at their place was they got to, is it an hour, without being behind, without, yeah, and before they go, if they will aim to not be behind after an hour. I believe once they're behind, then we've got them. I mean, I know we'll have to finish them off, but I believe we've got to score first and score in the first half. We don't got to, but that would, then it could be the walk in the park. It actually should be.
Okay, I'm going to pick the team. You can stop me at any time. Alisson in goal.
Yeah.
Arnold right back. Robertson left back. Matip and Virgil van Dijk in the heart of that defence. Fabinho.
Yeah.
We're all in this together at this point. I think, well, therefore, I think Diogo Jota starts in there as well.
Yeah.
Who were the other four?
Okay, well, we said, I think Salah, yep, wide right. I'm going to gamble, but I'm only 55% sure on this. Luis Diaz starts wide left.
So Salah, Diaz, I know you're two centre mids.
That's much. Well, it's Jordan definitely won.
Jordan definitely won?
Yeah, alongside Fabinho. Who plays there for Liverpool? I forget now.
I think it'll be Elias. I think he'll pick Elias.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Tim, that fella.
And I don't think, I think Firmino will play. I think I'll go Firmino, Jota, Salah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's amazing the different combinations you could pick, considering we got to, what did we get to, six players, seven players in, yeah, agreement, and then the combinations left for those other places is ridiculous. I am torn between what I'd pick and what I think he'll pick.
What do you think he'll pick?
I think he'll probably pick Elliot. and I wouldn't.
I'd pick Henderson, Thiago, and I'd pick Firmino and Jota.
Forgot about Thiago, he's good, isn't he?
Yeah. I'd pick Firmino, Jota, Salah.
Because I think as well, you've got to, and do you know what, he might actually do this, because I think you've got to manage, with players coming back from injury, you've not just got to manage their minutes, you've got to manage the like adrenaline levels and the highs and lows, and Elliot's just had a huge high, so it wouldn't do him any harm to not start on Thursday and let Thiago start the game. And then maybe that's your switch on 60 in that sort of position.
There we go, sorted it, if they were listening. The lads, get it all boxed off. Thank you very much indeed to Sean, to Paul, to Rob and to Andy for producing Liverpool on the march through this season that can gather momentum very, very quickly. The best way to gather momentum is just to win games. Join us for Liverpool Just Winning Games. Download the app, get stuck into everything, because Liverpool have started winning and I just sort of think they are never going to stop.
Sports Social Podcast Network.